Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's how Sporting KC rocks it on a weekend. A home 3-0 win over Portland Timbers. How about three straight wins, all by way of shutout? And this followed the most dismal stretch of the season. I want to welcome you into Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810, WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here running the show. Rudy Salazar as well, as we are broadcasting from the Riley House Studios. Yeah, Sporting KC. The only thing, I'll give you the negative first and then the positive. The negative thing was purely personal because the Royals game was on. Sporting couldn't be on live. So I was working a different event last night. I was working a UMKC soccer game, so I could not watch the Fox Sports Go app while I was actually working. But I kind of thought that, you know, Fox would put it on one of their alternate 500 channels, and I could tape it and watch it later. Instead, I had to wait till 11:30 to watch it. But it was time well spent. A 3-0 win. Absolutely fantastic. And it wasn't close, folks. Portland Timbers came into Kansas City with no intention of getting a win. Their sole intention was to park the bus, play for a scoreless draw, and get out of here with a point. And they got absolutely steamrolled by Sporting KC. Steamrolled! If you want to come to Sporting, if you want to come to Children's Mercy Park and play a boring brand of soccer and think you're going to walk out of here with an easy draw, it ain't happening. Peter Vermes has proved that over the years. You don't do that. Sporting KC made him pay in the biggest way. And for a few minutes, Sporting KC was at the top of the table in the Western Conference because FC Dallas had their game. Had a big weather delay, but they came back and beat Minnesota 2-0. So right now, FC Dallas is still at the top of the table in the Western Conference, but Sporting KC is right there, right on their heels, just 3 points back. And this is a much better place than Sporting was in just 4 to 5 weeks ago. So good stuff from Sporting KC. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Dominant performance, and the kid who's supposed to be or has been labeled the super sub, Daniel Shallowy, gets a start, scores 2 goals, gets a brace. Johnny Russell, who's still trying to work back to total health, cannot play 90 minutes yet, came in as a late sub in the second half, goes right in and scores to the delight of the crowd. And if you're a Sporting fan and you saw the videos being posted last night, so there's this girl in the stands. I don't know if she was in the Cauldron or the South Stands, but the whole game, she's holding up a big sign that says, "Today is my 9th birthday," and something to the effect of, "I want to meet Johnny Russell," or "I want to say hi to Johnny Russell," whatever it was. And after the game, Johnny Russell hopped over the barrier, gave her a hug, took a selfie, and then ripped off his jersey. Not ripped, that implies it was torn. Took off his jersey and gave it to her. And she was crying. She was so happy.
It was a cool moment. What's with the man bra?
I believe that's the heart monitor that all the players wear. Sporting was one
Rudy
of the first.
Rudy confirms.
Yes, that was one of the. People laugh at that, but Sporting was one of the first teams in Major League Soccer, maybe the first team, that during training, their players wear a strap around their chest that's a heart monitor, or they wear the man bro, or the, what did George,
it's either the bro or the man's ear.
The man's ear from Seinfeld. So what they do is they do a baseline heart test for the players, like the resting heart rate, max heart rate. They track it during every practice, look at the results, make sure that everybody's healthy, which, by the way, I have a comment on that later about college football needing to do this, but Daniel Shallowy with a couple of goals, which is outstanding. How about Tim Melia in goal? He has 10 shutouts this season. 10! And when you talk to Tim Melia or Peter Vermes, they will always say, no, the shutout is not just Tim Melia's. It's the defense. It's the central midfielders. It's the forwards coming back to play defense. It's everybody. So 10 shutouts for Sporting KC this year. That's outstanding. Another dominant performance. 3-0 for Sporting KC. And Daniel Chalerou is making a, you know, or pardon me, it's Diego Rubio. My mistake, my bad. Diego Rubio had the brace. But there was this thought that when Christian Namath came in, that he'd eventually take over that spot. And Diego Rubio is the player who's making his case. And this is what you have. When you have a really good team and you have a lot of depth, you have players fighting for spots in the lineup. And that's a good thing. If you got a guy pissed off because he's not starting, good! Then he'll work harder. He'll press harder. He'll push the guys in front of him. It's always a good thing. So Diego Rubio is planting his flag. I want to start. I'm going to go out and score 2 goals. Now, just because you want to do something doesn't mean you can do it, but he's making his case. Johnny Russell, outstanding. Defense, awesome. And Portland not only came into Kansas City with the idea of parking the bus, getting a scoreless draw, and stealing a point, they came in to play a little dirty. And I was listening to, here's the benefit, although I couldn't watch the game live because it's not on and I pay a hefty cable bill. It should be on somewhere, but it's not. That's okay. I could listen to it on Sports Radio 810 WHB with Nate Buchady and Matthew Lawrence, and then I can listen to Davey B do the post-game show. And I totally agree with Nate Buchady and Matt Lawrence after watching some of the replays. The referee was not strong enough in issuing yellow cards and a possible red card to some of the Portland players. And it's alleged after the game that one of the referees told sporting manager Peter Vermes to blank off. And that's just looking at the video and trying to read lips. I don't know if that was the case. I suppose if Peter's up and listening in his office, I know he's working already. If anybody from Sporting wants to confirm that one of the match officials told Peter Vermes to blank off, you can let us know. It's what it looked like on video. That's what people were interpreting on video. And it looked like Ike Opara was trying to play statesman and keep cooler heads and try to get out of there with a 3-0 win and not get anybody kicked out of the game or suspended. So good stuff from Sporting KC. So let's set the table for the show for you. We're going to talk more Sporting KC later in the show, but coming up at 9:25, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, is going to join us to talk Chiefs football and their newest signing. You were all concerned about the defensive backs after that performance in Atlanta Thursday night? You should be. You should be concerned. And it looks like the Chiefs are concerned because they made a signing this morning. Field Yates from ESPN broke the news. The Chiefs confirmed it a few minutes ago. The Chiefs have signed free agent cornerback Orlando Scandrick. So I guess he's no longer a free agent. Now he's with the Chiefs. He was released by Washington Tuesday after he'd signed a 2-year deal in the past offseason. Jay Gruden saying he had nothing to do with his play, saying they parted ways with Scandrick because of the unexpected emergence of their younger cornerbacks. Here's the downside. Orlando Scandrick is 31 years old. So are we going down the Revis Island route from last year and grasping at straws here? 31-year-old defensive backs, for the most part, don't have a great track record. I don't know, Pro Football Focus tracks defensive backs by age. 31 years old, a bit of a concern for me. Played 11 games for the Dallas Cowboys last season. Don't know if the Chiefs are still in on Bashaud Breeland, who's been making his magical mystery tour for the last 3 weeks, visiting the Chiefs and about 7 other teams. But for right now, it's Orlando Scandrick. And you know the discussion is coming. Well, Steven Nelson is in the concussion protocol right now, but the discussion is going to circle back all season long about the Marcus Peters trade. because I did see a tweet this morning. Somebody had tweeted out, you know, last year when the Chiefs signed Revis Island, Darrell Revis, they still had Marcus Peters. Now they're in a spot where they have to sign a veteran, a 31-year-old, and they don't have Marcus Peters. Steven Nelson's in the concussion protocol. Kendall Fuller's been outstanding. And that's about it from your defensive backs. David Amerson, I know he was injured in Oakland last year. I know it was time for him and that organization to take a break. I get that. He hasn't shown much. And I'm still concerned. All right, Orlando Scandrick is signed. Great! Veteran experience. Played for the Cowboys. I guess we're picking off Cowboys players now. Anthony Hitchens. I'm still concerned. I'm very concerned.
When you always want to recreate another team's organization, it worked out so well when the Patriots were all brought here with Scapioli. And Rudy pointed out that according to Eric Eager, who comes on with Petro from Pro Football Focus, Orlando Scandrick graded out at a 41.5 last season. Just to give it a point of reference, David Amerson, 39.7. Steven Nelson, 76.8. Kendall Fuller, 90.
And look, Pro Football Focus is a great resource. But it doesn't tell you everything. But that's a pretty telling number. If Kendall Fuller's a 90... And Orlando Scandrick is, what do you say, a 41?
Yeah. 41.5.
Again, not confident here.
And it also goes on to, Eric Eager again goes on to say that basically all of these guys are built to play inside corner. So the Chiefs essentially have three inside corners now and no one to play the outside is his contention. And again, Eric Eager works for Pro Football Focus. He's a basically a football scientist.
Okay.
That's how Soren describes him. He used to do mathematics and was a college professor, and now he works full-time.
Yes, I've heard him on many times.
Right. So
he left the job, but was he at an Ivy League university or
it was
like MIT or something?
I can't remember which school, but he was already a tenured professor and he's my age. So
a prestigious job in academics and statistical analysis.
And so take his data for what it's worth.
But I guess it backs up the eye test and the age test when you see a guy that's just okay and he's 31 years old. The stats and analysis can back up what you think. Or it can negate what you think. If you think a guy's not very good and you look at the numbers, well, actually, he is pretty good. So that does not give me comfort. I get it. The Chiefs needed to make a move. And Bashaud Breeland is still out there probably wanting a 2 to 3 year deal with some pretty good chunk of change. The problem is for Bashaud Breeland is this late in camp, a lot of teams, at least competitive teams, are backed up against the cap. Or they've figured out they have young guys that can play your spot for a lot cheaper. Or they're happy with the veteran guys they already have. Bashaud Breeland's probably going to be disappointed with whatever deal he ends up signing. But if the Chiefs are out there, still looking, still working, still negotiating, still trying to bring him in, good! They should be! Should also be looking at Eric Reed. He's still out there. He's got the collusion lawsuit against the National Football League for allegedly being blackballed because of his stance on the anthem. He's a damn good player. Again, affordability may be an issue at this point in camp for Eric Reed. But when the cuts start happening, well, they don't start happening. They all happen on one day now, but players get released, other players get signed. When Brett Veach starts massaging the roster, so to speak, and they look for ways to acquire more cash and cap space, as Carl Peterson used to say, cash and cap. I can't do it justice. Curtis Seabolt is the best Carl Peterson impersonator I've ever heard. I should just get him on tape saying cap and cash. But Brett Veach will look at this roster, start moving the chess pieces around, a little bit like a moving game of Battleship, and try to figure out where to find the money. If you really want Bashaud Breeland, You got to figure out how to make the money. And they better figure out how to shore up the defensive backs for the Kansas City Chiefs. Otherwise, it's going to be a long season. So we'll talk about that more with Nick Jacobs coming up at 9:25. Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, also part of the new podcast over there, 4th and 1. Good stuff there. So we'll get into more of Orlando Scandrick. So we covered Sporting. We covered Chiefs. You know, yesterday we got through nearly 3 hours without talking about the Royals. But when they win and you have a really good performance, you talk about them. That's what gets airtime. Perform and have somebody stand out. So last night, the Royals on the south side of Chicago in one of the worst modern stadiums in Major League Baseball. Just say that. 3-1 win for the boys in blue. Alex Gordon goes yard. But the story is Brad Keller. Brad Keller was absolutely phenomenal last night. And he was in jams. He got in and out of jams a couple of times. But he was really, really good. And gosh darn it, I just had the box score up. I wanted to make sure my numbers were accurate. This is what happens when the computer slows down just a little bit. So pardon me while I go through this. So Brad Keller last night was phenomenal. By the way, Brad Keller is the only Royals starting pitcher with a winning record right now. Only one. Last night, 5 innings. Not ideal, but 5 innings. Okay. 7 hits. 1 earned run. He gave up the home run. He kind of hung a breaking ball in there, a changeup. 5 strikeouts, no walks. 94 pitches to get through those 5 innings, but 64 were strikes. Brad Keller continues to be a major find for the Royals. As much as you want to criticize, you know, Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo and Scott Sharp and the scouting staff, that's fine. That's fine. Perfectly acceptable. But also, recognize when they go find guys. Brad Keller pitching for the Reds. Not a standout name. Did anybody have him on a top 100 chart? Was anybody saying, I got to trade for this guy? Maybe Clint Scholes did. I'm not sure, from BP Kansas City. David Leske from BP Kansas City is going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour. But was anybody clamoring for Brad Keller? Was his name at the top of any hot chart? No. But he's been pretty damn good for the Royals. He's now 6-5, as I said, the only starting pitcher with a winning record for the Royals. So looking back at his last couple of starts. So last night, 5 innings, 7 hits, 1 earned run. 5 strikeouts, no walks. On the 13th against Toronto, 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. On the 7th against the Cubs, 6 innings, 7 hits, 4 earned runs. So a little bit of a hiccup there. But Brad Keller, going to be a part of this rotation next season. And the discussion, Jed, you remember this, early in the year because he was working out of the bullpen, right? And so the discussion was being started, should he pop in for a spot start? Should he get a look in the rotation? And conventional wisdom, I fell into this trap. Conventional wisdom is, well, don't mess with him. He's having success in the bullpen. Leave him out there. Don't mess with him. I fell into the trap. I fully admit it. Admit my mistakes. And the Royals said, well, actually, we kind of need a body. And this guy's made over 100 starts in the minor leagues. It's not like he's unfamiliar with the role. And he's been pretty damn good for the Royals.
Yeah, not to rain on the parade.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
We haven't had rain in a few days. We need some.
It might rain today.
I know. I see the clouds.
Brad Keller's a fine pitcher. He also did all of this in 5 innings. So let's not sit here and he went 8 2/3.
Right.
You know, he just gave up that bomb and they didn't want to let him finish the game or whatever. He also did this against the White Sox, who left 9 runners on base in scoring position. So, I mean, you want to get excited, and there are very few bright spots for the Royals, so I certainly see why people would look at this as an encouraging thing. But again, 5 innings, 94 pitches, that's okay. It's fine. But again, against the White Sox and having a team strand 9 runners in scoring position is certainly very beneficial to your to your outing. I mean, he gave up 7 hits in those 5 innings. He presumably was getting out of a lot of trouble.
He got out of jams. That's what Ned Yost said after the game.
Which is a good quality in pitchers. But again, if you're working out of trouble against, say, the Red Sox in those instances, as opposed to the White Sox, you're probably going to have a different outcome.
Not long for that game.
No.
And if you're pitching in Fenway Park, that's not going to end well. You're talking about the strikeouts. So Keller had those 5 strikeouts in 5 innings. The White Sox struck out 13 times last night. That's almost hard to do. But that credit the bullpen, too. Brian Flynn, Kevin McCarthy, Tim Hill, Brandon Maurer, Willie Peralta, all combined for 4 innings of shutout baseball. So good stuff for the Royals. Whenever we get multiple teams getting wins on the same night, I'm good with that. Or over a couple of days. So the Chiefs get a win in Atlanta Thursday, Sporting KC, and the Royals get wins last night. It's all good stuff. It's all good stuff. I had one other. I was looking at something here. But that's the main stuff. I will kind of update you. So earlier in the show, we're going to talk about this later with Allie Trost at 1025. So we were talking about the heart monitors that the Sporting KC players wear that you can call the man's ear or the bro. That's what it looks like. But Hugh Williams, who is a big youth coach in the metro area, he's put a lot of young girls and women into college on scholarships and coaches boys too. Used to be an assistant for FC Kansas City, but he did not move with the team to Salt Lake. He stayed here. He's got his roots here. A good Hugh, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe a good Welshman. So he texted me and said, not only do those devices that the players wear in soccer monitor heart rates, they have GPS trackers. They log your mileage, which is important stuff in soccer because they always tell you at the end of the game how many, like if you watch a European game, that if a player gets subbed out, sometimes they'll tell you how many kilometers they ran.
Yeah, that was big during the World Cup. I knew they had a way to track it. I just didn't realize that that was the method that they employ.
Yeah, I guess it's all together in one device now. So good. Hugh, thank you very much. Appreciate you listening to the show and adding the information. All right, we're coming up on a timeout here. Plenty more still to come in the show. At 1025, Allie Trost will be on from the Blue Testament to talk Sporting KC and their big win and what lies ahead. How about 3 straight wins all by way of shutout, now 3 points out of first place. Awesome stuff. At 11 o'clock, David Leske from BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus will join us. We'll expand a little bit more on Brad Keller and Alex Gordon reaching certain milestones with his home run last night. So David Leske at 11 o'clock talking Royals. But coming up next, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, is going to join us. Talk Chiefs football. Orlando Scandrick, the latest signing for the Chiefs. Can he make a difference as a corner for the Chiefs? Plus some of his thoughts from Thursday night's game down in Atlanta. You're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is running the show. We're live in the Rally House studios. We'll be back with Nick Jacobs right after this.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank God.
Yeah. Hey. 901 Shelby Drive, look alive, look alive. Came up on this side, now they on the other side. Oh, well, f*** them, dog. We gon' see how hard they ride. I get racks to go outside, and I spit it with the guys. We up on the other side.
See, some of the newer hip-hop I don't really care for, but here's where you bring me back. You got a good bass line, like this song. That's key for me. It's big.
So Rudy's going to bark some nonsense about how awesome Drake is. I don't even like Drake.
No, I don't.
But
I don't like him
this,
much.
He has, like, literally 2 good songs. This is one of 2.
Greatest Drake song of all time.
That's fine. Yeah, it's one of 2 good songs he has, Rudy.
Get
out of my control room.
Does he sing or rap in his real voice, or is this all... that is his voice. Okay. All right.
Rudy just likes him because he likes Kentucky for some reason.
Well, Drake is one of the most well-known frontrunners in professional sports. He'll claim the Raptors, but then all of a sudden, oh, I'm at the Warriors game, or, oh, hey, Rockets, way to go, Rockets. And he's a frontrunner. I get it.
I mean, he has a lot of money, so he can afford good courtside seats for a lot of different sporting events. Maybe that's just the appearance. And then you don't want to be the guy just sitting there in a t-shirt. I mean, I wouldn't care. I wear t-shirts all the time, but you got to support the home squad, so maybe he just buys a lot of jerseys.
Who's the reporter he wears a t-shirt with a reporter's face on it? I don't know if he has a crush on her or She's a top NBA reporter, and I'm totally...
Cassidy Hubbard?
No, she's a veteran. She's been around a long time. I think she played professional basketball. God, it's killing me. Oh! Oh, well. Doris Burke, thank you. Gosh, Brenna Van Langen's going to get all over me for that. Doris Burke. He'll wear a t-shirt that says, I don't know if it says, I love Doris Burke. Or
everybody loves Doris Burke.
Everybody loves Doris Burke. There's not a coach that she's intimidated by. And there's not a coach who tries to intimidate her. Because coaches,
TV is the best.
Huh? Yeah.
She played ball at Providence.
Coaches, NBA and college coaches, will at times, depending on the coach, will try to intimidate reporters when they try to do the halftime interview or the postgame interview. Nobody intimidates Doris Burke.
No, she's a pro, and she's actually really good when she does play-by-play.
Yeah, she should
like
do
that.
More of that, yeah. Yeah, she should get more of that.
Big Doris Burke fan.
Absolutely. Speaking of fans, I'm a fan of this guy, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, part of their great department over there. Also have the great new podcast, Fourth and One, which I believe is on episode number 4, Nick Jacobs, is that right?
The 4 is up right now. 5 will I guess we can call it dropping on Monday.
Hey, you know what? We played Drake coming out of the break, so you got to use the term drop when something comes out, right?
I felt uncomfortable doing it, but yes, that's what it'll be.
Well, you're 4 podcasts in with number 5 dropping on Monday. Mm-hmm. Can we still call it new? When do we get past calling it new? Can we go to like 10? Like 10 podcasts?
I don't know. I mean, whatever feels right to you, you go with. You go with what your heart feels right.
That's one of the key terms you always use when we work together at Metro Sports. I'd ask you, what should we do for this show? What should we talk about? Whatever feels right in your heart.
Exactly. That's just the way to go with that.
All right. I think all of us were deeply concerned about the Chiefs secondary after the performance Thursday in Atlanta for good reason. Well, first of all.
So were the Chiefs, apparently.
Yeah. So, you know, Eric Berry was out. I get that. Daniel Sorensen might be out for the year because his knee has been destroyed. And they had a player get knocked out.
Steven Nelson.
I had a mind blank for a second. Steven Nelson, who tried to dip. I thought he was lining up for a perfect form tackle, and then the Atlanta back just leaped over the top of him and cracked him in the helmet with his knee, and he was concussed. And who knows how long he'll be out, but the Chiefs are making moves on a Sunday. Field Yates from ESPN was the first to break it, but Orlando Scandrick, who has spent the last 9 seasons with the Cowboys, a former fifth-round pick, played in 11 games a season ago. He's 31 years old. He's not a guy that picks off the ball. He only has 8 career interceptions. He does force some fumbles, and he does have some stuffed tackles, but it's not... This is not a panacea. He may still have something left in the tank, but a 31-year-old guy who doesn't get turnovers, to me, that's not making me feel great over cornflakes this morning.
Well, I would say with Scandrick, a lot of the time they were trying to run cover 2 down there in Dallas during a big part of his tenure there. And I don't know if zone coverage was kind of his wheelhouse, because when they first drafted him, they were going a different road with that scheme, and then he was able to kind of adapt and stick around there. At the time, coming out of college, he was a physical corner that could tackle. He played with a bit of an attitude and chip on his shoulder. Now, I know Cowboy fans have been frustrated with him over the years, and for me, I think part of that is actually kind of scheme, not necessarily his skill set or ability. So I think the Chief Scouting Department's they've identified that they think they can utilize him probably in some zone and man, and that he's capable of doing both. And I think worst case, you could put him as a slot corner or a number 4 corner if you need to.
Which we seem to have a lot of, right?
Oh, well, they have that's kind of where the complications have been right now, because Kendall Fuller, whenever they go to their sub package, they put him in the slot, and then they've brought in Amerson in to be the outside corner on the left side, and then Steven Nelson's been the corner on the right side. So it's, and Amerson has struggled a bit in some of the preseason games. So I kind of took this as potential insurance for Amerson, and I still kind of do, but I think it gives them more flexibility if they want to keep Fuller outside, which is selfishly what I'm kind of hoping for at this point.
Well, Washington, by the way, you're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House studios. Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News is our guest talking Chiefs. You know, Washington cut Scandrick a couple of days ago, and their head coach, Jay Gruden, said, you know, nothing to do with his play. We just had some emerging young players. Okay, so Washington traded Kendall Fuller to the Chiefs. Then they cut Orlando Scandrick, who is signed by the Chiefs. Is Washington just stacked up with corners? Are they just loaded with corners now? What's going on there?
All I'm saying is I'm going to be keeping a watchful eye on what corners they get rid of.
Right.
Here in the next couple of weeks, because they do have some athletes over there, and I know the Chiefs appear to be very attracted to their scheme and style of play. Because already,
well, why wouldn't you be?
This is the third player related to them. I mean, you remember Rashawn Breeland,
right?
Was a free agent from the Redskins, and then you brought Fuller here, and then you brought Scandrick. So, I mean, you've had interest in three different guys that had just previously been with the Redskins. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they're keeping tabs on what they do over there on cutdown day in a couple weeks from now.
Well, according to Tom Pelissero from NFL Network, the deal for Orlando Scandrick is 1 year, $1.5 million. And I made this remark earlier in the show. Look, if you're a free agent right now and it's this late in camp, teams do not have a lot of cap space. They haven't made their cuts yet, but perhaps they'll figure out how to massage the roster. So for me, a 1 year, $1.5 million deal isn't a lot in this day and age in the NFL. It probably won't make that much of a dent against the cap. It will make some, but seems like a reasonable deal. Am I reading that accurately?
Yeah, and I think part of his deal is, I imagine it's probably vet minimum for him.
With incentives.
Potential incentives worked in to reach up to 1.5. So I don't think he's getting a base of 1.5. I think it's probably vet minimum. And given his age and range, I'd say that somewhere between probably 800 to 1 million in base. And then they'll potentially add in those incentives based on how many interceptions he gets or how many tackles or how many pass breakups or whatever him and his agent felt was reasonable for him to potentially get to stats and numbers-wise.
All right, we're speaking with Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News. Give him a follow on Twitter, @Jacobs71. He's a must-follow during Chiefs games and during the week. Always updated material and updated thoughts. And, Nick, I'll get to your favorite, the offensive line, coming up in a few minutes, but I'm going to stick with defensive back now. This signing of Orlando Scandrick, and perhaps there are some other moves in the works. I know Brett Veach and all GMs are always working to try to improve their team. Was this signing a direct result of what we saw Thursday night in Atlanta, or has this been coming for a couple of weeks and maybe the Chiefs' thoughts were confirmed on Thursday night that they're in trouble at defensive back?
Yeah, I'd probably go with your second one. Your second option there, because I know they were going to have Scandrick in for that visit Wednesday night, I believe he's supposed to fly in, and then they left for their trip to Atlanta on Thursday, and then they had the game on Friday. So I think they've seen what they needed to in camp. They already kind of had a suspicion. I think they've got a good grasp on where their needs are, because right now, if you're watching the games, their need is at least O-line depth, if not a left guard. If something comes available at tight end to maybe be that number three, maybe be a blocking tight end or something, or maybe there's a more athletic tight end that comes out, they need to keep an eye on that. Then inside linebacker depth for the number four and maybe number five spots, they're probably going to need to keep an eye on.
Absolutely.
And then cornerback, I think that this kind of helps them a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're still keeping an eye on it whenever cutdown day comes. And then the biggest thing of all, what they're going to have to decide is, and I think they're using the reps to figure out right now, is between McQuay and Murray, do they have enough there to work with? Depending on what happens with Barry's injury and with Sorensen being out likely till middle of the year around that ballpark, or do they have to go make a play to go get themselves a safety or two, not only for depth, but maybe even as a starter? So I think that's something that I'm assuming they're probably debating internally at the stadium and the practice facility. And the other biggest thing of all is, I think this is kind of the big week behind the scenes where teams start trying to feel out what would you give up for this player, maybe? What would you give up? You know, what do you want for this? And I know I remember hearing stories from Veach that this was kind of the time last year where they were trying to feel out the Sammy Watkins and potential Anthony Hitchens deal last year. And then they ended up with Ragland and Irving. So I think this is kind of the big week where I think teams are trying to see if they can sneak somebody off for a pick or for a player. And the biggest value the Chiefs have right now is at the running back position. I think that's where they have their most
very
capital.
Deep. Very
if
deep.
They have to make, if a team's looking for a back and the Chiefs are looking for one of those positions I mentioned, maybe there's an opportunity there to make a deal.
And Darrell Williams, if Darrell Williams does not make this team, and he's the kid who played at LSU and backed up Leonard Fournette and a couple of other top running backs, if he does not make this roster, he's going to be with somebody, and perhaps somebody's going to see his tape and make a little move for him. We're talking with Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. We're talking Chiefs football here. All right, a couple more things on the defensive backs, and we're going back to Friday. I think I said Thursday earlier. I for some reason, I get it in my head that all preseason games are on a Thursday, but now they're Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They're all week long. So the two other players who came in for criticism were Leon McQuay, who took a couple of bad turns and angles, but most of the ire from Chiefs fans, and deservedly so, was for David Amerson. Look, I understand the guy's coming off an injury, and things didn't work out in Oakland. It just wasn't going to happen for him there. But it's getting to a critical point where if he keeps making these mistakes, and look, I don't need stats to tell me that he had a number of failures in that game. But I know you watched the All-22 video. You look at a lot of deep video and replays. Was Amerson as bad as what I thought he was Friday night?
I would say initially watching the game live, I was like, oh, they're picking on him, and he's getting beat on a regular basis right now. The first play that I think people are going to remember was that 10 or 15-yard dig route on the end cut there whenever he got beat the first time, and he didn't really show the explosion coming out of the quarter turn and driving there. The biggest thing on that one is that the inside backer, which I believe was a Ligue at the time, he was supposed to be dropping back into the zone. He bit on the run fake, so that left that lane pretty wide open to where Ryan could place it wherever he wanted to. So I don't know if Amerson was kind of anticipating or expecting a little help from that zone that the inside linebacker was potentially supposed to be there for, or if he just couldn't be able to close on that aspect of it on that. So, I mean, organization no better on that one than they're probably making their grade on that. And then the other one that people are probably going to remember is the deep vertical route.
Yes.
Down the seam when he got beat for a big explosive play there. Part of that was that McQuay was the deep safety on that. And the tight end was running a deep crosser to the left side. And so McQuay started carrying himself with that because he was against a backer in coverage. And I believe it was Terrence Smith, if I remember correctly. And Smith was beat on that. So if Ryan wanted to throw that, he probably could have over there too. And then McQuay saw that Ryan was loading up to go down that seam route when he read his eyes. So then McQuay tried to do a turn, tried to take his momentum, turn in opposite direction, and run there with range. And he doesn't have, that's not really his skill set. The thing I learned about McQuay from that game is that he's actually more of a strong safety, downhill, straight line runner. And that's where he can kind of help this team. And I think he's pretty violent in run support and tackling to where I think he could help them in that regard. But I think they're probably learning on tape, him and single high as the free safety and trying to change directions, probably not going to work for him. But I don't know if Amerson was expecting help on that with the safety. And I know he was in trail coverage at that point, and the Ryan was able to place the ball, and McQuay was not going to get over there in time. So I don't know if Amerson's fully to blame on those two, but I do think that fans are going to remember it that way regardless. And the plays were still executed. I mean, Kendall Fuller, based on a Kendall Fuller standard, Fuller would be upset with himself for that. But I do know that a lot of people imagine those four plays, the two penalties in the first game, and then these past two, I know they're probably all pretty frustrated with them. But on the bright side, Amerson is at least willing to tackle and run support. So that's something you can build off.
Okay, we'll take that. We'll find out much more this week in the game against the Bears, because this is the one where, I don't know if coaches still do it the old way, but allegedly game three is the one where the coaches actually game plan for it, and the starters are going to go much, much longer. So we'll know more Thursday. And then the final game against the Packers, we're not going to see the starters at all. They're going to be in street clothes and ball caps. But one final thing on the defense, and then I'll get over to your favorite offensive line. Watching the linebackers, you mentioned Oligwe earlier. To me, he still looks very raw. I don't know if he makes his – I don't think he makes his reads very well. I'm not sure if he fights off his blockers in the right way. So that stood out. And the other thing that stood out – and look, you know me. I'm biased for Iowa guys, okay? But Ben Heelan is going to be on this team. He is going to make the Chiefs roster. Now, maybe that's a practice squad player. I don't think he makes it through waivers. Maybe it's the fake injury. He goes on temporary IR. But I think he's on this roster, and he showed me a lot, especially on those short yardage stops, his ability to penetrate and get to the ball carrier. He looked really good.
Yeah, with Oligwe and Terrence Smith, both, I would say both of them, that they've given the opportunities to when they have it on Ragland and Hitchens out there. What I see with those two is they really still aren't sure yet.
Right.
And they don't have enough experience yet to feel comfortable and sure of what they're reading, what they're seeing, how exactly to react and how to get to that spot and stay in the run fits. And above all else, like you said, neither one of them really seems to know how to get off blockers if they do get caught into traffic. And Oligwe, from what I saw, he missed some of his run fits, and he over-pursued, and that's where Tevin Coleman cut off, and that's where the cutback came from, when Oligwe over-pursued a handful of times and wasn't in the right spot exactly to be able to stop it. So I know that's where the Falcons were able to gash them because of that. And unfortunately, Oligwe's probably going to need some more time. He has athletic ability you want to work with, but right now, if you're putting him in a game situation, he's going to need a lot of reps, and in essence, you're going to go through a lot of growing pains that you already saw with the Tevin Coleman runs that you're going to have to deal with if he's in there and accept at that point. And like you said with Ben Neiman, I consider him their third best linebacker. I truly believe he could go in and play in a game right now, and he could be up to the standard that you want. He reads really well. He's very instinctive. He knows how to get to the spot, and he understands what his responsibility is. It's not too big for him. He looks comfortable dropping in his own coverage. And above all else, he has that desire to get there. And he has and technique-wise, he's already a veteran in terms of his understanding of how to get off blocks and how to keep offensive linemen disengaged when they come to the second level. And to be able to continue to keep the alignment at bay while still reading in the backfield to decide which way he needs to shuck the offensive lineman.
Well, he another Iowa linebacker. He's probably not as big and probably not as talented, but you remember Greenway, who's been with the Vikings for a long time, and he was kind of overlooked in the draft a little bit, but reminds me a little bit of him. One final question before I let you go, offensive line. I love your analysis because I love reading you and your analysis. I love reading Jeff Schwartz, the former Chiefs offensive lineman, whose brother Mitchell is with the Chiefs. I love reading his analysis. But real quick, give me about 90 seconds here. Offensive line, you noted better in pass protection, still a lot of work to do in run blocking.
Yeah, pass pro-wise, they gave Patrick Mahomes a much cleaner pocket, and you saw a better performance from Mahomes overall.
Yes.
He was a little nervous there in this first two to three plays, probably first series or two. But then he started to settle in when he felt that clean pocket and he was comfortable stepping up and running around. And he's able to throw a deep to Tyreek for that long touchdown because he felt in a good spot at that point. So pass pro-wise, I thought they were really did a much better job collectively across the board. So my tip of the cap to them. Now run-wise, I think they're going to have to make a decision here. Do they want to do some of their zone blocking or do they want to do man power blocking? And I think offensive line, I think it's like a synchronized dance. They all have to be stepping the right way, doing it all in unison, and be able to have the right technique for some of that zone stuff to work. And I just think it seems every year the line gets lost to no matter who's in about getting in that sink and being able to effectively do some of that stuff. So I think they're gonna have to make a decision scheme wise if they want to keep trying to do that, or if they kind of want to go a more simpler road that can be effective for them.
Fantastic stuff. Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. Follow him on Twitter, @Jacobs71. Also, check out the podcast from the guys over at 41 with Mick Schaefer and D. Jackson and Ryan Marshall and Todd Palmer. It's called Fourth and One. Four episodes are posted. Episode five, or no, is it four posted?
Yep,
and episode
posted.
Five is tomorrow. Drops tomorrow.
That's right. It drops.
All right. We'll be looking forward to the new podcast. Nick Jacobs, thank you very much. Have a great day today, and we'll be looking forward to Sunday Sound Off tonight at 10:30 with Mick Schaefer.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, does a lot of study. I worked with him for many years at Metro Sports, and he was always the guy in that back room or at his desk breaking down the All-22 and looking at extensive video and kind of helping us out a little bit, giving us some good insight. So Nick Jacobs, good stuff over there. All right, still to come on the show at 10:25, Allie Trost from the Blue Testament will join us. We'll talk about Sporting KC's big win last night and the run they're currently on. At 11 o'clock, David Leske from BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus will join us, talk about the Royals, Brad Keller, Alex Gordon's home run, and getting their third win in 9 games. Not the best, but still some stuff there to look at. All right, quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is with us here as well. We're live in the Rally House studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB on a cloudy, overcast Sunday morning in Kansas City. We went through, Jed, you remember that stretch back in, was it April and May, where we had like 5 or 6 consecutive weekends where it rained every day we were in here?
Yeah, it also snowed, actually.
It's snow and ice, too.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe get some rain today. We could always use it. By the way, my name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is running the show. We're live in the Rally House studios. You can also listen on the app, which you can get at 810WHB.com. Also, the podcasts are there as well in case you miss anything. Good stuff from Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, who's got his own podcast with the guys over at 41, Fourth and One. A play on the station numbers, good stuff. Sneaky how they did that. So my level of concern was, DEFCON 1? Maybe not DEFCON 1. Maybe DEFCON 2, because isn't 1 the worst? DEFCON 1 is nuclear war. I'm trying to remember from the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick.
It's a terrible movie.
And Ali Sheedy. I'll watch it, though, because it's so bad, I watch it.
I thought it was DEFCON 5 was the worst.
I thought, well, now I got to look at it. See, this is what happens. I start spouting off about stuff I don't know about. I know you're going to look it up, aren't you, Jed? The DEFCON levels?
No.
Let's just say, how about Red Alert? Full red alert watching that Chiefs secondary Friday night down in Atlanta. And Orlando Scandrick has not moved that to yellow. Not moving the needle. 31 years old, played in 11 games last year. Not necessarily a penchant for forcing turnovers. Only has 8 career interceptions in 8 seasons. But as Nick Jacobs said, that's not what he was asked to do in Dallas. So if he can help out, great. But it's not the solution. The solution is still out there somewhere. Either one of the guys on the roster who has not performed up to this point will step up, or there's a player floating around, be it a free agent, be it Rashad Breland, or be it through a trade with somebody else.
Or maybe the front seven actually gets better and creates a pass rush so that the corners and defensive secondary don't actually have to guard for 45 seconds. I don't know. That's just a thought. I'm going to pause it.
Yeah, because Matt Ryan didn't get dirty, did he?
No. So you have to hope that Derek Nnadi, Chris Jones, Alan Bailey all are able to create some pressure. Xavier Williams, if D Ford is ever going to do anything, now's the time. I mean, the time was 3 years ago, but if you're really going to ever try, why not do it now? But I think that ship is gone. So you hope that Breland speaks and guys like that, maybe some of the young guys in the secondary, be it safeties, are able to make a bigger difference.
Yeah, but it's not done yet. Brett Veach has some work to do with this roster. Going to have to do some digging. Going to have to do some wheeling and dealing. Going to have to maneuver the salary cap and get somebody else in here. It's got to happen. By the way, I did look up the DEFCON levels. DEFCON 1 is the worst. That is.
That doesn't make any sense, though.
Nuclear war is imminent, is DEFCON 1. The worst the United States has ever been is DEFCON 2, and it's happened twice. Can you guess when?
Probably sometime in the Cold War.
Yep. None of them having to do with Russia, though.
Mm.
Well, actually, one did. One did, because they supplied the nuclear weapons to this country. The Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh.
DEFCON 2. We were close. And the Gulf War.
How do you like that?
There you go. You learned something here. I learned something because I got the order backwards. I would think 5 would be the worst, but it's 1. On that note, now that you know your DEFCON levels, and I think we're in a good spot right now, we'll take a timeout. Coming up the next hour, Allie Trost from the Blue Testament will join us and talk Sporting KC's big 3-0 win over Portland. At 11, David Leske, BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus, will talk Royals. We'll take a timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here live in the Rally House Studios. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. Look at what direction and right for a trend of
thought over. This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.